Will, will grab your attention tonight because he always grabbed mine. And we just give it up for Elliot. Round of Vice Elliot.
Oh, man. Now I remember why I told Bill twice. I told him no. Elliot Alcoholic. Everybody on Zoom. Is that good?
Yeah.
I'm grateful to be here, truly. Happy birthday, Rita. Wherever she went, there you are, front row, of course. Wishing you were up here. Yeah. There's a reason they give alcohol. It's a podium and not a stage. But happy birthday. She's been a big part of my recovery the last 4 years, and she does well for everybody in these rooms. Welcome to the new people. Welcome to my friends that are new too. The 1 day lady, that's a big deal. The 1 year, 1 day. I remember those, and I don't think I'll ever forget them. I think I left my papers somewhere. These are not notes. These are the steps. I was told that the steps will get me through anything, so I'm gonna test that tonight and see if it can kind of keep me on track a little bit. As Jim said, I got here about 4 years ago for the second time. When it stuck. This is not my first time going through AA. I came the first time. I came the first time back in around 2014 after getting a DUI in 2012. Well, I took a COS truck that I had the keys to, and I was really drunk, and I drove it about 80 miles an hour through a red light, got T-boned, arrested, so on and so forth. And it was about 2 years of court and going through all that stuff. And, you know, during that time, initially I quit drinking. You know, I remember getting out of jail. They held me in jail for 3 days, and I showed up to my buddy's house, and he had a ball of Crown. And I remember thinking, no, you know. I said, maybe I should hold off a little bit. And I did. I did. I held off for, like, I think it was, like, 17 days or something like that. Once the kind of nerves and the fear went away and I found out I wasn't going to go to court for a while and, you know, that kind of stuff settled, I started drinking again. And in that time, waiting to go to court, I got arrested again, for being out at a local bar in Tulare. Slicks, if you've ever been there, love it. oh man. I don't really remember what happened. I do remember getting arrested, waking up in the drunk tank, calling my girlfriend at the time, going to court about a month or so later, and, the look on my public defender's face was pretty priceless when he said, did you get arrested for drinking in public? And I was like, yeah. He's like, man, you know, the only thing that we have going for you is that you've never been in trouble before. And I was like, oh, well, I kind of ruined that. And when he asked me, like, what happened, I couldn't come up with a really good answer. The only thing I could say was, you know, I had a really bad night, and I went and had a few drinks, and that's it. And that was kind of the case over and over and over again. I don't know how many times I went out thinking, okay, I won't leave till 9. I'll stop at 10:30. I'll go home. I'm only going to have 2 tall Bud Lights, maybe like 1 Crown or Patron, you know. And I would make these deals with myself, and I'd go out, and yeah, I didn't know what happened. I don't know. I still don't know, you know. I just know that, like, I would kind of remember getting into my driveway or waking up in it, you know, and then kind of brushing it off and going to work and getting through that day and doing the same thing over and over again, you know. But you would think that after this huge accident, I wouldn't drink anymore, but I just could not. You know, like I said, the fear had gone away from what was going on, and, like, my nerves had gone down, and I kind of thought, well, you know, if I just drink a little, you know, and I won't get in trouble, which I did. So fast forward, I end up getting sentenced to some jail time. I get 2 felonies from it. I get 5 years of felony probation, outpatient program, 4 AA meetings for a year. And, And the whole time I didn't drink because I had to. I was now being drug tested and breathalyzed and checked on, and I had to, you know, all these crazy things. And so I went to all these meetings all the time, and I had my little court card, and I sat in those meetings for a year, for a week, and I would say, I'm Elliot, I'm not an alcoholic, but I have to be here. You know, and I say that every time I share. I try to, because how disrespectful of me was it to go into those meetings, open or closed, and no one ever jumped down my throat. No one ever told me what a piece of crap I was for going in and going. People didn't come and tell me, Ella, you're an alcoholic. Well, one guy kind of did, but it is because he cared. You know, he saw what I didn't see. He came up to me through about right towards the end, right from my last meeting. He said, Elliot, he's like, no, we're not supposed to tell each other. You know, we're not supposed to say you're an alcoholic or you're an alcoholic. That's for you to decide. He's like, but I think you're an alcoholic. He's like, and I think you're too smart for your own good and you're going to miss everything. And for whatever reason, I thought he was complimenting me. I really thought that he was telling me, like, you're so smart, you'll figure this out. You know, like, you don't need us, you know. I would come to find out later that's not what he meant at all. So I went to my last AA meeting. It was like the end of, I don't even remember what year it was. I think 2016. At the end of 2016, I went to my last AA meeting. And I waited about 30 days to drink again. For whatever reason, I decided that I was going to wait till this wine tasting event that this company was putting on out in the fancy old Corcoran in the gymnasium. And I figured, hey, like, this is a great, safe way to test the waters. You know, it's been a year. Now, in the meantime, during that year, I was not drinking, okay? But there, I would do some things, like I would go get drug tested once a month, and then I would go to the dealer's house and do a sack. Because I knew, like, I could get out of my system, you know? And I know it's AA, but drugs are part of my story, too. Welcome to the Tweakers. My sponsor loves when people say that. And I heard once that it's not wrong to talk about drugs in AA. It's just wrong not to talk about your alcoholism. So that's that. If you don't like it, talk to your sponsor. But that's what I would do. I would go do that because I would time, like, how long it took to get out of my system. And for me, I did that, or at least I told myself, it wasn't because I was a drug addict. It was because I wanted control. I felt like every outlet that I had to change the way I felt had been taken from me. I wasn't allowed to smoke or drink or do blow anymore. And they didn't give me an alternative, you know? So I felt very stuck. And so that was the best thing that I could come up with to feel better and to feel like my life wasn't being ran for me by the court system and by my probation officer and by the outpatient counselor and all these things. So that was me being sober for a year, you know. So I went to this wine tasting thing thinking the cups are like this big. They, you know, if you've ever been to one, they hand you one. It's got a little your name and stuff on it, and it's only like a half of the size of a regular wine glass, and they don't even fill that thing up, you know. There's only like 12 tables, and once again, I don't remember what happened. I remember starting it off, tasting just fine, and then I found out we could go back for seconds. I thought it was like a one-way, you know, loop around all the tables, so I figured it was safe. Well, then it wasn't. It never ended, and I couldn't even make it to the dinner afterwards. I had to leave because I got drunk, she got drunk, we fought, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And that was my first run out after not drinking for a year. I wish I could say that that was like a big red flag, and then I, you know, stepped back, and that's where my sober day was, but it's not. That was the end of 2016. I went for another almost 2 years, trying to figure it out, you know. I really, when I came in here and I saw those steps on the wall, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. First of all, I only read the first part of that thing. You know, that I was powerless over alcohol. And I just didn't believe it. I couldn't accept it. I truly believed that there was a way. That if I did like two IPAs and a Patron, then I could like feel the way I wanted to feel and leave. But that never happens. You know, the first thing I thought was Bud Light. I said, I'm never drinking that crap again because I can drink 45 of them. And, you know, that's what's wrong. Like, I'm drinking too many because they're weak. And that was my logic. And what I would come to find out is really what that meant was that I can't. I just can't, you know. I learned that the second go around. I'm only powerless over alcohol, and that's what I didn't understand the first time. I thought it meant like I'm not allowed to do anything, that I got no power over anything, that I'm gonna be a doormat, you know. And when I finally got to the second half of that sentence of the unmanageability, I was like, unmanageable. My life has been ran by a probation officer, a judge, an outpatient counselor for years. I said, my life is completely managed. It may not be by me, and it may not be the way I like it, but I'm not the one in charge. You know, and that's kind of how I saw it. So after those 2 years of trying, you guys, I really, really tried. Okay? I tried. I would sit on my hands. I would figure out a formula. I would tell my boss. I had good lies. I had bad lies. I believed most of it. A lot of other people did too. You know, when I got sober and I told people I quit drinking, a lot of people were like, why? What? Did you have a drinking problem? You know? So a lot of stuff was covered up and I didn't have to worry about it. Excuse me. I need to drink water. But I had finally believed it. You know, there was nothing happened. When I got my second DUI, it wasn't that big of a deal, guys. I had parked at McChevron in Tulare. I fell asleep on my phone, creeped the car into a bush, you know, and fell asleep. It wasn't like the first one, this big old horrific crash with a truck caught on fire twice. I cracked some dude's ribs, punctured his lungs, destroyed that truck, lost my job, lost my college, lost everything. It was very... And I turned around, you know, they pulled me out. Hear this first. Are you okay? Yeah, I'm taking a nap. Go back to sleep. Put the car in park. Step out of the vehicle. I'm all, put the car in park. You know? And so I put the car in park. I take my foot off the gas or the brake. And they pulled me out of the car, and I turn around, and I look in the car, and guess what, guys? I don't remember what happened. Like, I remember parking. I don't remember where I was before. I remember being at Behar's this time in Tulare. I remember that much, and I don't remember anything else. He turned me around, and I look inside of my work vehicle, okay, that I was supposed to buy from the company the next day. I was getting the next day, okay? February 1st, it would have been February 1st, my sobriety date. Everything was changing to me. I was getting a new car, full coverage insurance, like for my body, you know, health and stuff, teeth, vision, like adult stuff, raise. I mean, everything, it was all changed. And I lost it all. But when you turn me around, here's my favorite part of my own story, is that you turn around and all I saw was blue Bud Light cans scattered all through the car. The first thing I said I would never, ever, ever do again, because that's what gets me in trouble. But this time I didn't blame the Bud Light. I heard that whole year that I sat in those meetings, I thought I didn't hear jack shit. And there's something weird about this program. You can't stick around long enough to catch alcoholism. And that's what happened. In a moment, I heard everything that those people said. I heard all the steps. I heard chapter 3. I heard chapter 5. And I just heard John tell me how smart I was. One more time. And I understood what he meant. It was that. I sat there the whole time thinking I was that guy that they were talking about, that it was going to be hats off to Elliot, that I was going to figure this thing out. I'm going to come back and I'm going to show you guys that this is how you do it. And I knew at that exact moment there was no figuring it out. I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew that there was no guaranteeing what happened after I drank. Because even to this day, I've heard crazy stories of people doing crazy things, but in my mind, I tried everything. You guys, if I could have figured it out, I'd be out there. I wouldn't be up here standing. For sure. Because my drinking was not all bad. It wasn't, I had a lot of good times. There was a lot of stuff attached to that. I had a lot of friends. We partied. We did cool stuff. It wasn't always that. You know, I didn't get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I got in trouble, it was because I was drinking. I've never been in a sober fight. Okay, I take that back. One time I've been in a sober fight. A guy socked a punch, a pregnant girl. My bad. I overreacted. I apologize. I've never been arrested sober. I've never woke up in my driveway 2 inches from my house sober. So I came back. I heard that. It took me about 30 days. I had 33 days before I could come back into the AA meeting on my own. That moment I knew I was an alcoholic and I knew what I had to do, you know, but I didn't know what was in my future and I didn't really understand. And I went back to being drunk immediately. Okay. I was sober for like this long after they pulled me out of the car. I had my moment of clarity. The obsession to drink left right then and there. I have not tried to figure out how to get drunk since that day. I wish I could tell you like the clouds opened up and like I got struck by lightning and I have a little cross tattoo burned into my ass somewhere, you know, because it was like this awesome moment and like I've been perfect ever since then, but that is not what happened. I immediately went back to being a drunk a-hole, fighting the cops, resisting arrest, not saying nothing, you know, like to the point they had to pin me onto the table to get my blood, you know, because I was arguing with them, telling them I'm not on probation anymore, you know, and they're like, you most definitely are. And I don't need to go there, but it was fun. Anyways, my point is, my point is, although that thing happened, it hasn't been perfect since then. I came in, I was once again, court ordered AA, you know, thank God. I remember saying that. I was like, I don't care what happens, just send me to AA. I didn't care if it was a prison AA, because that's what I was facing. They told me the last time I was in court, when they released me from that program, when they signed me off for being such a good person on probation and demoted me early and all this stuff, while I was doing all the stuff I was doing, they told me minimum 1 year in prison. Because it was such a bad, and they, you know, they wanted to give me a strike the first time, but I had no back, you know, I'd never been in trouble before, thank God, and all this other stuff, but they told me, one more time. And for whatever reason, that's not what happened. There was a program in Tulare at the time. It was like, if you've ever been to drug court, it was kind of like that, but for DUIs. If you didn't have enough DUIs, they wouldn't let you in. So you had to have a minimum of like 3 felony DUIs and they put you through this whole program. You know, it was like 6 months for every 2 weeks for 6 months, I had to go to court and go talk to Judge Johnson over there and check in and drug test and do all this stuff and go to meetings. It was going through the same path that they had put me through the first time, you know, everything but outpatient program. Thank God. But it was different. For the first time, I wanted to be in that room. You know, so they gave me that court card. I had 33 days. I don't know how I stayed sober those 33 days other than I just remember the first night over and over and over. I remember that my last drunk over and over and over again for those 33 days. I would try to kill time. Like I had a vacuum, but I wouldn't vacuum the car. I wouldn't vacuum the carpet. I would sweep it so that I could kill more time because I was just waiting to get my court card so I could go to AA. because I needed to hide behind that thing, you know, because I knew John was going to be there. For whatever reason, I knew John would still be there, and I knew a lot of those guys would still be there, Jerry, and a bunch that have, you know, a few that have passed now, God bless them. But I knew I was going to have to look them in the eye, man. And I knew that this time I was going to have to say, they were going to make me say it. I knew what they were going to do, you know. So I said, all right, I'm going to go to the Hillman house, you know, I'm going to go over there because that's where I remember. And I'll, if you've ever been there, there's like a room in the front with a table where the main, you know, everybody kind of sits, but it's a house. So there's like rooms separated. So I'm like, I'm going to go to the back near the kitchen on the bench where you're behind the little thing. And like, we'll take this easy. You know, we'll go slow. Ease into this thing. And, I walked in and of course the room was full, you know, there's one chair open and it's right at that damn table. I told myself, I'm not going to sit at that table, man. I'm not sitting at that table. And I remember I closed the door like this. Because I just didn't want to go in the room. Yeah. And a buddy of mine from high school was secretary of the meeting. And he just slides the chair back and he says, hey, this one's for you. And I didn't even have a chance to tell him no. You know, and I looked around and there was John. There was Mark, Jerry. And it was that was the first time I admitted out loud I was alcoholic with those guys. And I was sad. I cried like a little girl because I thought my life was over. I thought for sure that I had to be this square bear guy that, you know, wasn't going to have any fun and be boring and I'm not going to be funny and I'm not going to meet girls and I'm not because you've taken this magic away from me. You know, and that first night, man, a bunch of those guys around my age, they take me over to Chili's in Tulare, and we order some food and we sit there. And I mean, man, we were there for like 2 hours, you know, and it went by very fast. And it was the first time I realized everything was going to be okay because I looked around at a table full of people, okay, laughing and having a good time. And there wasn't one drink on the table. It was all water and soda. And I just, a calming effect kind of came over and I was okay with being an alcoholic now, just a little more, you know, just a little bit. I was okay, you know, that maybe this isn't going to be so bad. These guys are square as fuck, but, you know, but maybe it won't be that bad because I had to admit at that point, I saw that I had caught myself laughing. And I was mad at myself because I was having a good time, you know, going to the same places that I used to, but now I wasn't drinking. And that happened over and over and over again, you know. And I met my sponsor, that guy that pulled the chair out that I went to high school with. He sponsored me for a little bit. I ended up changing and started doing steps. We're good on time. Okay. And that's for me when everything kind of started to change. It was different. You know, I kind of already went over step one. I admit I was powerless over alcohol and then my life was unmanageable. I finally, you know, the equation was over. I was done figuring it out. Once my sponsor pointed out that unmanageability of my life, you know, even when the alcohol was removed, that was the kicker. He says, it's with or without it. How's your life? And I was like, fuck. That's cold, man, you know, but it was the truth. It was the truth. And we were able to go on and do step two. Can't you believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity? So if I can't, okay, I learned that in step one. I can't. Over this thing, over this disease, over all this, I can't. God can. That's what I was told. I didn't necessarily believe it right off the bat. You know, I was weary towards God like a lot of people that I know that come into this program were. My influence of church was a stepmother who beat the living shit out of me and my sister. And was also our Sunday school teacher. She raped her and molested her and beat me and starved us and all these things. So that was my attachment to God. So when I came in here the first time, I heard God. I mean, it was kind of over right then and there. You know, like, I've been there. I've gone to church and I've seen you people and I know what you do at home. You know, but this was different. And I knew that I couldn't do it. I knew my friends couldn't do it for me. And I had to rely on something else. And that's what happened. And that's all he asked me to do. He said, just believe that a power greater than yourself, call it whatever the hell you want, can. Not that he will. Just believe that it can. And so I was able to swallow that a little bit at a time. And then we went on to step three, which was really uncomfortable for me. You'll hear a lot of people talk about step four being all messed up. And for me, that wasn't the case. It was this for me. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And now my sponsor had to go over that like six times because I was getting two different messages. Okay, it's God, but it's how you want him to be, as you understand. And my old thinking couldn't separate those two things. Well, if I change what God is, well, now I'm really going to hell. You know, because that's one of the first things you learned at church. Don't question God. This is how God is. It's hell or heaven after that. That was my interpretation. And he said, it's as you understand him, as you understand him. And he said, Elliot, he said, look, it doesn't have to be that God. He said, it doesn't even got to be God. He said, it could be the group. It could be a doorknob, which he didn't recommend. Okay. He said, you just could. He said, but be very careful. He said, he reminded me, Elliot, if your higher power can die, get another higher power. And I took, and I kind of understood what he said, you know, as much as I wanted to rely on people and rely on that doorknob and to rely on meetings and to rely on the court and all that stuff to keep me sober, I knew, he explained, he said, at some point, Elliot, none of that's going to be around. You're going to be at home in your living room by yourself with your own shit. And then what? So just a little bit more, you know, I was able to digest this thing just a little bit more. And he took me and he said, okay, he read the part in the book about getting down on your knees, holding hands and doing the third step prayer. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And he takes his shoes off, my sponsor. Okay. He's an old man. He's 76. If some of you know him, grass. And he starts taking his boots off. He's in his recliner, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Getting comfortable. So he's doing that, and he gets off the recliner, and he gets on his knees. And I was all, oh, you mean like for real? and so he's down there, he's like, you know? And it was the most uncomfortable, miserable, effing thing I have done. I sat there and I held that old man's hands. And he let me read the prayer that we were going to pray, you know, once before. And then we did it together. And that was the first time I had prayed with someone since I was like 12. You know, and I wish I could tell you that I got up and I felt better, but I didn't. I felt... What happened for me in that moment was not good or bad. I hate to describe it as a bad feeling, but I just didn't feel great. Okay. What happened was that is when, for me, I was done. I had finally gotten over that God thing. Whether it was going to work or not didn't matter anymore. Because I had softened myself enough to do it. I never saw myself being able to do that kind of stuff. It was borderline humbling, you know, because I felt so defeated. I had finally given it up, you know, because at this point I had taken one and two in very small steps, you know. I was just learning about my disease, building that relationship with that, just being introduced into a higher power. And now it's beginning to get real and it's beginning to feel real and I'm starting to do stuff that I hadn't done before. Or maybe I'm doing stuff that I had done before, but it made me feel different, like praying. Made me feel different. So we go on to step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I had heard a lot of bad things about this step in meetings before, and people getting stuck on it and spending 2 years on it and doing all this stuff. And I expressed that to him. You know, I said, I don't really know what it is, but I know this much. And he said, Elliot, he said, it's a moral inventory. He's like, it's not an immoral inventory or a bad, it's not a good or bad. He said, just write it down. So he told me, this is how I did my thing, kind of. I'll try to be quick with it. Because it took me a while to get started, you know, on how to, like, who am I going to write down? And, you know, I would, instead of looking, if you're not familiar with what I'm talking about, I'm sorry, get a sponsor, do 1, 2, and 3, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about right now. I highly recommend it. And, you know, I'm looking at all these columns, and I'm taking them all in, and I'm trying to figure it out. And he just says, look, man, he's like, first of all, do the first column, then the second one, then the third one, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, look, he said, picture yourself in a room with one door, no windows. He said, and start writing down the names of the list of everybody you don't want to walk in that room. And I was like, oh, you know, and that's how it went. And once that thing kind of was gone, and I started, you know, and I'd go back to him and I'd ask him like, hey, I don't understand any of this shit, you know? he would try his best to explain it the way best grasp could. And sometimes I'd go over to the Bridge Street. They had a 10-step meeting, where I learned that the 10th and the 4th are kind of the same. Stick around and learn little secrets like that. And I just did that 2 or 3 times, and it was over, man. And I went to him, and it was done. And it took me about a month, because I'm not a writer. It's just one of those things. And no one, I don't think anybody is, like, excited about learning how everything's their fault. You know? I wasn't. Because that's kind of, like, what I felt had happened after that. You know, like, I felt like I couldn't blame nobody anymore, you know, and all this stuff. And it was nice to go and do the 5th step with him. We admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And I didn't understand that thing until I did it. Because, like, I was raised, you know, the church I went to was Team Me and God. You know, even when I was like, when I ventured off into the Catholicism, same thing. It was me, priest, God, the same crap, you know? And, I really did not want to sit there and go over this stuff. I was down to pray. You know, I was like, can I just pray about it and get that over so I don't got to tell you about it? You know what I mean? Now I was like, he said, and that's the difference, man. He's like, A, I'm not here to judge you. He's like, I'm not here to tell you that you are worse than the other guy, my last sponsor, or better than, or equal to, or none of that stuff. He's like, I've done it. Now it's for you to do it. And it was very easy, man. I sat there and I read it. It ended up turning, I thought I had nothing to say, and we sat there for 2 hours. And at the end of that 2 hours, I said, Grass, and at this time my fear column was basically blank, right? And I said, Grass, I'm not scared of anything anymore. Like, I don't get it. You're like, I'm like spiders. Like, I hate spiders. Like, don't call me to kill the spider. I'm not the man for you, okay? Sorry. And I said, but other than that, like, I don't know. And he told me, Ellie, he's like, you just spent 2 hours telling me how you were scared to be in a relationship, how you were scared to have kids because of your stepmom and you were afraid that the process is going to keep going, how you were scared to be in a relationship because between the two parents that you've had, there's 6 divorces, or what is it, 7 marriages and 6 divorces, and neither one of them married. Do the math, okay? And going on and on and on about all these things that I was scared of doing because of what somebody else had done. And what he told me, he asked me a question. He said, Elliot, are any of those people still hurting you right now? He's like, when was the last time you saw your stepmom? When was the last time you saw that ex-girlfriend and she cheated on you? Years. He said, if you're still hurting, whose fault is it? I was like, dang. So what I learned in that thing was this, that basically I had let a hurt, abused, fucked up little 12-year-old run my life for the last 20 years. That's what doing a moral inventory will do for you and sharing it with somebody. I was hurting myself, guys. You know, I heard a speaker talk about I think everybody has a reason why they drink. I think there's good reasons. I believe that I drank for a long time because I was abused and my dad was an asshole and my mom was a drunk and all these other things. I believe that I began drinking because of those things for a lot of reasons, for a lot of reasons like that. When I got here and I learned that I couldn't keep drinking for those reasons, and that's what I was doing. I had used stuff that happened a long time ago that was real pain. It was, okay? And I'm not trying to take that from anybody, myself at all. It was real, man. And it hurt. But it wasn't still happening. I was using it as an excuse. And that was not easy to hear. But what it did, what it told me was, and what he told me was, now there's something you can do about it. If it's your fault and you're hurting you, guess who gets to put the knife down? And he began to show me how to do that. And after doing 1 through 5 and doing that and getting a little humility under my belt and just doing things that I didn't believe in, like praying and getting on my knees and reading in the morning and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I did all these things that I didn't understand why or believe in or anything like that. Didn't, but I just did them. I was told, Elliot, you cannot think your way into good action. You must act your way into good thinking, which was tough for me. You know, so I had to do stuff that I didn't want. I'm telling myself, and he told me, Elliot, it doesn't matter what you think. You could think about stealing the car. Don't steal the fucking car. You could think she's a bitch. You don't got to go tell her. Just go give her a hug, say, welcome to the meeting, and get on. I don't want to. A guy stole my bike early on in sobriety. The first thing my sponsor told me to do was pray for him. I said, fuck you, man. I said, he stole my bike. Didn't you hear me? He's like, look, Elliot. He said, he probably needed it more than you did. He's probably sick like you were. He probably needed it for whatever reason. He said, pray for him. And it was stuff like that over and over again that you guys would throw at me. You guys would throw shit against the wall, and sometimes it would stick, and sometimes it wouldn't. It would just slide down into a shitty pile. But every once in a while, man, ooh, you know, and you would get me a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. So we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I was ready. I was ready for something different. I didn't know what my life was going to be with this whole thing. I didn't. I didn't know what was going to stay. I didn't know what was going to go. I really felt like there wasn't going to be any Elliot left, you know, because I thought so much of it was attached to that, and I needed that to be this. And once again, he told me, he said, you don't got to believe that he will do it. You just got to believe that he can. And I said, okay, and we moved on. Then I asked him, when it was 7, so I humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. It was the humbly part that was tough. You know, because what I wanted to do was say, take this, this, and this, but could you leave me a little bit of that and don't even touch that pile over there, you know? Because my defects of character have character sometimes, you know? and that's what I believe. So we did. I did that. We went on to 8. I made a list of all the persons I had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I wish it was a short list. It wasn't, you know, but I got through it, and I've had to add people on over the years. And I've also got to take a couple off, actually, at that time. You know, there was things that I interpreted as, and my sponsor laid things out for me, and I just got to take those things off, and it was either, and maybe it came up later, and maybe it didn't. After that, I made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I haven't had to work very hard at this, guys. It's kind of cool that if you just do whatever it is you're supposed to do, those people will walk into your life. I don't know how many times it's happened. I'm going to tell you a quick story. I know I'm pushing it close, but I just went on a trip to Wisconsin, okay, a few weeks back, and I'm flying back home. I'm in Minnesota, okay? I live in Porterville, guys, flying to Bakersfield from Minnesota. I'm in the back seat of the plane. I'm talking to the 2 people next to me about living in California in the valley or whatever. And this guy turns around and says, where are you from in the valley? I'm like, oh, you don't know. I'm from Tulare. He's like, oh, we just moved from Visalia to Prager. Oh, okay, cool. Hour into the flight, the lady stands up. It was a teacher of mine who I was a prick to, man. I mean, we're all pricks in high school, you know. But, like, I really gave it to her, and I had always felt bad. And she was not on that list. Okay? Miss Tomier from my fucking 10th grade history class was not on my amends list, guys. But I was presented with a freaking opportunity in Minnesota from my Tulare Western High School teacher. And the only thing I could think of was, God, lady, I am so sorry I made you kick me out of your class. Because that's really what had happened. It wasn't her, man. I called her a bitch every day. It was me. She didn't kick me out. I made her kick me out because she couldn't keep me in there because it ruined everything else for everybody. That's what I'm talking about. I didn't go searching for that lady. I was in, did you hear me? I was in Minnesota on the back of a plane. Okay? It's amazing what will happen. 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. I wish it didn't say promptly. If it didn't say promptly, I would have swallowed that thing a little bit better. You guys would just give me time to apologize. but I learned I had to be prompt. When I did something, I needed, to the best of my ability, no, to the best of my willingness, because my ability tends to outweigh my willingness sometimes, to the best of my willingness to turn around and correct those things and clean my side of the street up. 11, stop through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. It was through this step I learned how to pray. For real. Because I used to pray and ask for shit. You know, I really did. I used to pray. I'd say, I need this, this, and this. Please don't let this, and this happen to me. Amen. Let's go. What I learned was, is I had to ask for direction. And pretty much everything but my will. Okay, and that's kind of where my prayers are at these days. And now I meditate. Because all I was doing was talking. I was praying and asking for shit, talking and walking away. I would never sit and listen for the answers. And that was in sobriety for a long time. I ran that way. And so someone pointed out to me. And I'm very glad that they did, because today I get to sit by myself alone and be okay. There was a time in my life where I could not do that. I had to get up and go out. I had to go be with something. I had FOMO like a mofo. Okay? And the only way to solve that for me was drinking, and it's not today. I may not be perfect, and I seek other stuff out sometimes, but I promptly am able to come back. Because I was given tools. I was given a higher power to rely on when you mofos aren't around. Because I can't make it to every meeting. I can't always be in my most fit spiritual condition. Everything ain't going to go right. You guys, when Ellie got sober, everything else stayed the same. The world didn't change. Those meetings were still there. Those people were still there. All those assholes are still out there. It's through that prayer and meditation that a lot of my comfort comes. I wish I could tell you I went to like 17 meetings a week, and that's where I, you know, and that's what it is, but it's not, guys. I love my meetings, I do, and I love every single person in those meetings, but it's the weakest part of this whole thing, if you let it be. Please, go get you a sponsor and do those steps. Because if you do 1 through 11, there's pretty much only one result to this thing, guys. And you might think it's not drinking, but cool. It's to have a spiritual awakening. That's it. That's all you're here for. To change of perspective, to change. It says it right here in the last step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, not as some result or as one of many results or as a result, as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics under Paxton's principles and all of our affairs. I was told I had to give it away to Cuba, guys. And I'm so glad. That even after that whole year and telling you guys you were wrong and I'm not an alcoholic in those closing open meetings, I'm so glad that you guys welcomed me back, pulled that chair open, and gave me a place to give it away. Thank you guys so much.